Serve It Cold, Episode 18. Written by Ronnie Blackwell, presented by Dancing Cat Studios.
Yellow? Butch, good to hear from you, son. Your mama's only just gone to bed. Hold on, I'll go get her. Me? Oh, well, of course, son. Everything okay? Nobody shot or nothing? Good, good. You know, you gave me a start. You don't usually call this late and... Well, late-night calls in our profession, rarely good news. Yeah, I know Johnny Speed. He's the one that does the private detecting on the side, right? Landis Grantham? Yeah. I thought you and Eaton Barton got froze out of that case. So, Johnny felt all civic and give you a lead? And he thinks this nasty piece of work ragging it is tied up with the brother and cheating wife on account of their mutual vice and that he himself was set up just to provide the two of them an alibi? He say why he thought they did it? Do you think Johnny's on the up and up? Okay, then. I take it you're calling for a reality check, so here's what I think. Johnny's assertion about the marijuana is not sufficient as evidence. He needs to prove his point on that. Not sure I can do that without producing a sample of the weed in question, and he's way too smart for that. He give you his notes and photos yet? Tomorrow? Good. Make sure you pin him down on the connection between them all, and, you know, it'll all fall apart without a motive. Okay, so just how'd you get invited to this shindig? Oh, that damn dumb waiter. I hope you didn't tell that old story about Buddy and me pissing ourselves on Halloween night guarding that honky-tonk, waiting on that worthless and no-good Skinny Haney to come slinking back after the raid. Only good thing to come out of that episode was Haney getting sent off to Whitfield and then thrown out a third-floor window. Saved the state a mess of money on trial and execution.
What is it about sleeping in your own bed? You would think that after a night of wallowing in luxury at the Royal Guesthouse, I would be totally spoiled. But truthfully, I felt like I was returning from a month of sleeping on the ground when I slid into my bed, my own worn trench in a battered futon. For some strange reason, the dogs had scattered to their own beds that night, but Vera had already shifted into REM. I turned toward her, slipped a tentative arm around her waist, and tumbled into my own sleep. It was delicious. Free from anxious half-sleep and fretful turnings. My dreams were of flying among a vast swirling flock of metallic green tree swallows over a coastal marsh. I could have easily swooped on and slept until noon, but Butch Ellis had other plans. I was in the middle of a barrel roll when the phone jangled me right down into the wallowing body of a middle-aged 350-pound man.
Speedy, you got the coffee on?
I rose on one elbow and gave a tentative sniff. Yeah, it's on. You close?
7 minutes. Bye.
7 minutes. Who in the hell says he'll be here in 7 minutes? A cop, of course. I was still stumbling around trying to chase one of my pants legs to ground when the doorbell touched off a raucous stampede from the front of the house by our sheepish pack of alleged watchdogs. I hopped along behind and grabbed the wire terrier before opening the door.
Speedy, a present? You shouldn't have.
No, you don't want this little package, trust me. Butch came in and stood in the living room, oblivious to the four labs pronging around him.
Come to think of it, that doesn't look like your usual brand of dog, Speedy.
It's my mother's. We're dog sitting for a while. Wire fox terrier. It's what you get when you cross a Tasmanian devil with a blackjack oak stump. Mean and knot-headed. I dropped the small dog to the floor, and she immediately jumped on the nearest lab, touching off a loud free-for-all. I ignored the tangle and walked into the dining room.
What well-mannered dogs! You've done a great job of training them, Speedy.
Thanks, we really work at that around here. Have a seat, Butch. I'll try and find two clean coffee cups. I grabbed the cups, the pot of triple pick Sumatra that Vera had brewed before she left, and a pack of fudge-dipped shortbreads out of the kitchen. Here you go. Breakfast of champions. Caffeine and chocolate. How's the case going?
Speedy. Not even 8 o'clock. And I'm working the swing today.
Oh, I see. No money, no thinking. I've always thought that about you guys in blue. But tell me, what did you not think about when you showed up at the station at 6 this morning?
5. But you're right. I did a little digging before the bosses showed up. But before I play show and tell, I've got a few questions I didn't want to ask in front of the group last night.
Like, who the hell is Sonny Richard and why is he hanging around Goat Johnson?
Well, that wasn't number one, but it is certainly on the list.
Well, I had some reservations about Sonny, too. Especially when it turned out that Sonny is the link between Narlene and Ragnet. But I think the bruises don't help him put his best foot forward. Short story? He's Goat's club manager slash bodyguard. Steve Item down at Margaritaville vouches for him on both counts, and from what I see, he's very loyal to both Goat and Narlene.
Using Steve Item as a character reference, now that's a new one.
I hear you. Now what is number one on your list?
This pot. What is all this about Super Pot? You really think that the smell of this stuff connects Ragnet to the Granthams? Pot smells like pot. It stinks. And just how mixed up in this sea of green crap are all of you? I never believed that you're nearly as stupid as you look, Speedy. But before I go further down the primrose path with you and your motley band, I need some clarification here.
I see. Buyer's remorse. You're afraid that we are not pure of heart, but merely stoned of mind. I reached over and grabbed my power book. I fumbled and clicked my way through to the picture browser. Butch, I know you've seen literally tons of pot. And while it's never been my favorite vice, I've rubbed up against my share over the years. But this weed is different from anything I've ever seen. In fact, calling it weed seems like sacrilege. This is ganja, to make any Rastafarian swoon. Very well cured and packaged. It's purple and green with bright red threads, and the smoke stinks like a paper mill. There's enough resin in this stuff to qualify it as a fire hazard, and I'm willing to bet that you guys haven't found much pot of this quality around here either. I swung the computer around so that it was facing him. The picture on the left is a sample of the pot that passed from Ragnet to Narlene Moore to Homer Blue's flock of baby gangsters to me to Sonny Richard and finally back to Ragnet and Joachim. On the right is a close-up of what Lily and Latimer were smoking on the night that I was busy documenting their alibis for them. Butch stared at the screen for a silent minute, then spoke.
That is certainly a weed of a different color. Okay, you've sold me. It came from the same source. But just do me one favor, Speedy.
Yeah?
Just tell me that the creamy white ass you have framing the pot in this picture belongs to Lily and not Latimer.
You got it. Latimer was otherwise engaged at the time. It was quite a show. I'll burn a CD for you if you like.
Speedy, I know the Mississippi doesn't license you private SOBs, but don't you have any kind of ethics?
Hey, look, I've been played from the beginning. There's no prospect of being paid another penny for this job, and if anybody ever had an expectation of privacy while cavorting on a French Quarter balcony, it certainly wasn't this particular pair of exhibitionists. I don't see where giving an officer of the law copies of evidence that might help solve murder is unethical. You wouldn't have any prurient interest in such evidence, would you, Butch?
Of course not, Citizen Speed. But speaking of evidence, tell me, you do have backups, right?
Backups times 3. Actually, I'll have a stack of CDs and a couple of DVDs ready for you in the morning. You see, as an ethical private SOB, I need to sort through all this stuff to protect my second client in the case. Now, before you get riled up, I think Goat will be willing to sign a release for anything I've got when it comes to it, but I'm hoping it won't be necessary to bring Narlene into this mess in any official way.
Okay, I can live with that. Just keep it safe, Speedy. I'm not ready to show my hand with the department anyway.
You asked how deeply we're mixed up in the pot deal. Well, you can well imagine that you can't just pass around a gallon bag of pot without bits and pieces falling out, but I can assure you that none of my team, in fact, no one who was present last night, has anything close to an ounce of this pot. Some of us may not be perfect, but we're not narco felons. Fair enough?
Good thing you put narco on that, felon. I hope I don't have to tell you to keep an eye out for young Mr. Windsong. But yeah, I guess I'll trust you on this one.
Okay, your turn. What did your early morning research turn up?
Speedy, I don't like inflating your ego more than necessary, and I really hate to say you told me so, but you might be right about Ragnet. There's a 10-year-old Chevy Malibu sitting in our impound lot that was found abandoned late yesterday in the Westlake Shopping Center. The only reason that we found it yesterday instead of 2 weeks from now is that it's got the license plate of a Dodge Stratus that was reported stolen from in front of the Lakeview movie theater late Wednesday night. The Stratus belongs to a teacher in East Jerusalem, so Eaton and I caught the investigation. Can't let stolen cars distract the West Side detectives from their murder, can we? The thing is that this Malibu just yells French Quarter. Mardi Gras beads and a gris-gris hanging from the window. A sign taped to the window saying the door is unlocked and the radio's already stolen. Unwashed, nicked and scratched and parked on the street and half full of trash, mostly old gambits and fast food bags.
Any Pringles cans in the top layer of this trash?
Yeah, I think so. Why?
Pizza-flavored Pringles is Ragnet's junk food of choice. You find any of those, I'll bet you a Krispy Kreme donut against a pound of Sumatra that you'll find greasy Ragnet fingerprints all over them. Butch pulled out his cell phone.
I've already convinced the crime scene guys to work the car today. I told them about the tip line lead on Ragnet, but I'm not ready to bring up the possible Ragnet-Grantham link yet. Marianne is going to run the Chevy's VIN and try to get a car tag number. Maybe she can get something out of Louisiana on Ragnet before we all die of old age. If anybody can, she's the one.
You've got Marianne working records and dispatch?
We really are shorthanded, and all the new administrators can't be bothered. I figure Marianne will be running the department in 2 years when the new mayor finds out that she's the only one who knows how to turn the lights on in the building.
While Butch made his phone call, I let the pack of dogs stream out into the backyard and made an effort to make myself more presentable. I returned to find Butch draining his coffee cup. He said,
"You were right on, Speedy. 6 pizza-flavored Pringles cans on the passenger floorboard. You may just grow into a detective after all."
"So you think Ragnet made a 3-car switch on the tags?"
"Yep. The Chevy's tags are probably on a Honda sitting in somebody's garage. But we have to find them to figure out what tags are now on the stolen Stratus."
"Butch, you know the old Arnold Line trail that comes within 200 yards of the Westlake Shopping Center? Shoots out across the back end of Lamar Park all the way to Coronado. I think it comes out less than a block from Landis's house."
"You sure? I thought that trail got swallowed up by subdivisions years ago."
"It's still there, thanks mostly to the neighborhood three-wheelers. I birded it 2 months ago. It mostly follows the power line cut."
"So you think Ragnet parks the Chevy, walks over to the theater parking lot, maybe a mile or a little over, and steals the Stratus? He drives back over to the shopping center, does the 3-way license plate switch. Then he walks, what, 3 miles, 1 way in the dark, kills Landis, walks 3 miles back, and makes his escape. Seems like a lot of walking in the dark to me. You know, they call them getaway cars because you can use them to get away."
"Yeah, you're right. It was just a thought. You ready for a refill?"
"No, one of us has to actually go out and do some detecting."
At the sound of us moving our chairs, the terrier started yapping at the back door. I turned and yelled, "Wilma!" The infernal noise stopped, at least temporarily. Butch asked,
"Wilma?"
"No, Wilna. Stands for Wilna Come When Called. The breed's most salient trait."
"Endearing feature for a dog."
Butch left, and I gathered up my clutter. As I went out the back door, I grabbed 5 small dog biscuits. I held them up so the dogs could see them and said, "Into your runs!" And the herd of uncontrollable dogs, including Wilna, galloped the 20 yards to the kennel and pushed their way into their respective runs. As I locked the gates and threw them their bribes, I asked, "Now why can't you act like that when company's here?" They just smiled at me. I found Gojo and Lurker in the store office, hatching a war-driving plot. War drivers use laptops, antennas, and sniffing programs to find wireless networks. For many war drivers, just the excitement of the hunt is reward enough for the hours of driving around and mapping the growing number of wireless access points. I didn't think that Lurker belonged that particular club. The co-conspirators had a map of Lake Shady spread out in front of them. Gojo asked, "See, can you tell me if this is Latimer Grantham's house?" I looked at the map and said, "Close. This lot is actually vacant. Latimer's house is on this point, right beside it. I took my pictures from the vacant lot on the other side of the house. but I don't want you guys going snooping around in these woods. Stakes are a lot higher now, and they may well have security out there.
No fear, see? We've got a plan. We already did a little war driving out there this morning, but we couldn't pick up anything in area, and the local rent-a-cop was mighty suspicious. I think the house is just too far from the road.
He flipped one of my surveillance pictures onto his laptop screen.
But when we got back here, Lurker spotted this directional antenna mounted under the eaves of the house right over the hot tub. They do have a wireless network, and they're boosting it so they can use it inside this fancy boathouse.
He put up a shot of the sloping backyard and boathouse.
We think that there's a study or home office on the second floor. Here.
He clicked again, and another view of the hot tub appeared, this one with the nude lily in mid-wave.
Now, here you can see three boats across the point, lining up for a good look and a couple of boats with people fishing. I bet this is the most popular fishing spot in the whole lake. So Lurker and I are going fishing.
Fishing. You two.
Come on now, see? Just because I live in town doesn't mean I'm of the town. I grew up fishing with Grandma, and you know that Lurker grew up on the coast. We're going to rent a boat down at the new marina, and while I'm fishing, Lurker's going to be war boating.
I turned to Lurker. Can you get close enough without attracting attention?
Sure. We can work this inlet across from their point, and be in the same arc as the boathouse, while being shielded from view from the house.
I don't suppose you're planning to take this fishing trip around sunset, are you? Lurker's face turned bright red, but Gojo jumped to his rescue.
It's the right time to do it, see? Lurker's got it figured out.
Oh, really? Tell me, Lurker. I really thought Lurker was about to pass out. He was transitioning from red to purple. Gojo continued to talk for him.
First, nobody is going to pay any attention to one more boat out there at that time. They'll all be watching the Granthams. And we know that they'll have their local network up and running right after.
I fought against asking the obvious question, but damn if I could figure it out for myself. Okay, I give. Why? How do you know this?
Because Lurker found out that a good number of these boaters run home and post to the Show Me Your Tits bulletin board after every performance. And so does Latimer.
Wow. And I mean, really, wow. Show me your tits. And I've been wasting my time on eBay. Transcripts? Lurker finally found his voice. He waved a keychain flash drive at me.
Check. 6 months of archive posts and sorted for Lily and unsorted.
Great. Can you spend some time reading this stuff before your fishing expedition? You know what to look for, but I'm especially interested in anything that might have Raginet or Joachim's names. And Lurker, don't take any equipment on that boat that you can't afford to chunk into the water if it comes to it. That means the camera, too. Got it? Lurker started to stutter.
Camera? I wasn't...
Suddenly, from behind me, I heard...
Oh, my God.
Narlene. I felt my face redden to match Lurker's as she continued.
So that's what you wouldn't take me to see, Jonathan. Wow, that's excellent work. Will you help me with my photography class next semester? Oh, you're embarrassed. That's so pre-Janet Jackson of you, Jonathan.
Gojo had shown Narlene 5 or 6 more samples of my photographic masterpieces and had invited her along on the warboating escapade before I managed to compose myself enough to speak. Wait a minute, guys. I'm not about to endorse sending Narlene Moore to a public peep show with 2 guys weighted down with surveillance equipment. If you end up in jail, Rap, your mother and Goat will race each other to get to me, and you might not get out in time to attend my funeral. Lurker, of all people, spoke up.
It's not illegal. War driving isn't, that is.
No, war driving is not illegal, yet. And if you erase and dump your equipment when push comes to shove, I'm sure a good lawyer can get you out of trouble. But that will not keep you from getting arrested by Catherine's finest, hassled, booked, interrogated, jailed, conveniently lost for a couple of days, and brought before Hanging Joe Harless. I can tell you from personal experience that this is not a life experience you want to collect. Besides, Rap, I could use your help today if you're finished with classes.
I'm done. I just had a first period class. Is it okay to bring my bodyguard along? He's up front looking for some kind of herbal tea in your soft drink coolers.
Best of luck to him on that hunt. But who's guarding Goat's body today?
Goat says if he has to be cooped up with Sonny one more day, he'll kill himself. Besides, he says he's got a building full of carpenters armed with nail guns to do any protecting he needs. What are we gonna do?
For starters, we're gonna look for a Louisiana needle in a Mississippi haystack. It'll be fun. 30 minutes later, we were cruising through the tangle of strip malls that formed the leading edge of Catherine's western sprawl. Sonny was riding shotgun. It was amazing how much healing a good night's sleep had done for him. His face was still noteworthy, but it no longer made you want to vomit when you looked at him. Narlene was sitting in the middle of the van's bench seat and flaunting the Mississippi seatbelt laws by leaning forward between the two of us. She was still trying to grasp the car tag situation.
If you think the car is stolen, how do you know Ray did it?
Oh, you told us that. The Chevy was filled with pizza-flavored Pringles cans. You apparently left such an impression on Raginet that he's given up littering. As soon as Butch gets Prince from Baton Rouge, we'll have that link confirmed.
And now why would Ray do this three-way switch thing?
Because he thinks he's clever. He's been speeding all week and he's overthinking. All he needed to do was throw the tag from the Stratus into the woods and steal a tag to replace it. There are dozens of cars driving around Catherine without tags. How long do you think it would take for you to miss your car tag? And when you did miss it, would you call up the police or just go down to the courthouse and pay the lost tag fee?
So you think that if he went to the trouble of putting the Stratus tag on the stolen car from Louisiana, he put the Louisiana tag on the car he stole the tag from that he put on the Stratus?
Right.
Who's on first? You guys are making my head hurt,
whined the Wushu master. We ignored him, Narlene continued.
So how are we going to find a particular car tag when we don't know the number on it?
Well, we will have the number soon, I hope. And while we're waiting, all we have to do is go where the car with the tag is parked.
Jonathan, remember you are Jessica Fletcher, not Miss Cleo.
Oh, ye of little faith. You've got to believe. I drove into the Westlake Shopping Center and drove down the long double line of cars. Narlene and Sonny were about to break their necks trying to read the car tags as we passed. Narlene called out,
There's Louisiana tag. Jonathan, you're going too fast.
Don't worry. Miss Cleo's on the job. We'll come back and check these if I'm wrong. In the back of the parking lot was the little dirt trail that led to the larger Arnold Line hiking trail. This back corner held just a smattering of cars. And there it was, just sitting there, as big as day. There you go, doubters. That's the car, right there. It was an early 90s Buick LeSabre that had been hot-rodded. A supercharger pushed up from the cherry red hood, and the racing suspension gleamed from underneath the car. I parked and turned to my junior detectives. I'm going into this tire store right over there. If someone comes to this car, just ask if this car tag is the right one. If it is, let them go on. If it's not, call me on my cell phone. As I approached the TNT tire and transmission shop, Tom Miller walked out to meet me, wiping his hands on a blue rag as he came.
Johnny Speed, where have you been hiding, son? That wasn't your car that the police towed out of here, was it?
We shook hands. No, Tom, but that's what I'm here about. Was the one they towed parked back here?
Yep. Right about where you got that raggedy van of yours parked.
Whose tricked out Buick is that parked over there?
Oh, that's Petey. Petey Saunders' kid. Petey's a damn good transmission man. I think you went to school with his daddy.
Yeah, way back in the last millennium I did. Petey wouldn't have a Louisiana car tag, would he?
Nah, I can't see why he'd have a Louisiana tag. He's owned that thing for more than 2 years now.
Let's go talk with Petey, Tom. I think somebody switched plates with him. The car that got towed was stolen in New Orleans 2 days ago. Before another hour had passed, Petey and I had swapped several Pete Sr. stories. Butch and Eaton had shown up and taken away the car tag. I'd scored a paper sack full of Tom Miller's homegrown tomatoes, and armed with Petey's correct license plate number, we were cruising the West Catherine parking lots for the stolen 2002 Blue Stratus.
You have been listening to Serve It Cold by Ronnie Blackwell, starring Eric Rowe and Beth Wojcicki. Diverse parts by Roger Johnson, Mike Wynn, Martha Holloway, Paul Fisher, and Julia Holloway. Theme song, Where Is the Love by Michelle Malone. You can find out more about her and her music at www.michellemalone.com. Artwork, courtesy of Georgia Godwin and Laura Mann. Serve It Cold is a free audiobook available at dancingcatstudios.com. This and many other fine works are also available at patiobooks.com. For a print or ebook version of the book, visit ronnieblackwell.com or search for it by name at lulu.com. Dancing Cat Studios produces full cast dramatizations of novel length fiction. We'd love to hear from you. You can shoot us questions and comments by email at dancingcatstudios@gmail.com or start some wild speculation about your favorite episodes at our website, dancingcatstudios.com, or just pick up the phone and give us a call at 206-350-7613. Serve It Cold is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivative Works 3.0 U.S. license. A copy of this license is available at creativecommons.org. Ronnie would be delighted for you to share episodes of this work as often as you like, with as many people as you like, provided, of course, that you give credit where credit is due, you do not charge any fee, you do not use any part of an episode to create something new, and you only copy episodes in their entirety. Some sound effects are courtesy of the Free Sound Project. Direct links and complete credits can be found at dancingcatstudios.com.